Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Dr. Reddy's Q2 FY21 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Amit Agarwal. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Very good morning and good evening to all of you, and thank you for joining us today for the Dr. Reddy's earnings conference call for the quarter ended September 30th, 2020. Earlier during the day, we have released our results, and the same are also posted on our website. This call is being recorded, and the playback and transcript shall be made available on our website soon. All the discussions and analysis of this call will be based on the IFRS consolidated financial statements. To discuss the business performance and outlook, we have the leadership team of Dr. Reddy's comprising Mr. Erez Israeli, our CEO, Mr. Saumin Chakrabarty, our CFO, and the investor relations team. Please note that today's call is a copyrighted material of Dr. Reddy's and cannot be rebroadcasted or attributed in press or media outlet without the company's expressed written consent. Before I proceed with the call, I would like to remind everyone that the safe harbor contained in today's press release also pertains to this conference call. Now, I hand over the call to Mr. Saumin Chakrabarty. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Amit. Greetings to everyone. I hope all of you are keeping safe and healthy. I'm glad that we continued with our momentum of new product launches, productivity improvement, and strengthening of COVID-19 portfolio while delivering the promise of serving our patients unabatedly even during these challenging times. The current quarter was witnessed with strong sales growth across all our key markets, healthy gross margin, significant leverage benefit on SG&A, which resulted in a healthy EBITDA and profit margins. Let me take you through these in a bit more detail. For this section, all the amounts are translated into US dollars at a convenient translation rate of rupees 73.54, which is the rate as of 30th September 2020. Consolidated revenues for the quarter stood at rupees 4,897 crore, that is $666 million, and grew by 2% on a year-on-year basis. The year-on-year growth, adjusted for proprietary products outlicensing income of rupees 723 crore recognized in the same quarter of previous year, stood at 20%. Growth is primarily on account of new product launches across markets, volume traction in base business, and integration of business acquired from Hofer. Our NAD business grew by 28%, Europe business grew by 36%, India business grew by 21%, emerging markets business grew by 4%, and PFI business grew by 20%. Sequentially, our revenues grew by 11%, supported by gradual improvement in the volume pickup in India, Russia, and other markets, new product launches, and full quarter impact of the business acquired from Hofer. Sequentially, we saw 46% growth in India, 6% growth in both NAD and Europe, and 8% growth in emerging markets. Consolidated gross profit margin for this quarter has been 53.9%. Although on a reported basis, it declined by 360 basis points year on year, adjusted for out-licensing income during previous year, there has been an increase. This increase was driven by improved productivity, forex benefits, and product mix partially offset with price erosion. Sequentially, margin declined by 210 basis points due to lower export incentives, adverse forex rates, and product mix. Gross margin for the global generics and PSAI were at 59.4% and 26.8% for the quarter. The SG&A spend for the quarter is ₹1,311 crores, that is $178 million. A decrease by 1% year on year and an increase of 3% quarter on quarter. The sequential increase is primarily attributable to incremental costs arising with the integration of acquired business from Wockhardt and increased sales and marketing related activities post unlock. Freight costs has shown a reducing trend post unlock with improvement in carrier availability. However, so far as productivity is concerned, SG&A as a percentage of sales at 26.8% reflects an improvement of 80 basis points year on Y and 200 basis points quarter-on-quarter. The R&D spend for the quarter is ₹436 crores, that is $59 million, with an increase of 19% year-on-year and 10% sequentially. The spend is in line with the increase in the number of R&D projects, including development of COVID-19 products. As a percentage of sales, however, R&D was at 8.9% of sales. The EBITDA for the quarter is ₹1,267 crores, that is $172 million. EBITDA margin is at 25.9%, surpassing our aspirational target of more than 25%. Profit before tax for the quarter is ₹862 crores. That is $117 million, with a year-on-year growth of 12% and a sequential decline of 2% after absorbing an impairment charge of ₹78 crores on certain products in line with the requirement of the accounting standards. Effective tax rate for the quarter is at 11.6%. The ATR has been lower due to recognition of deferred tax assets for one of our subsidiaries. We expect the ETR to be around 25% for the full year, as alluded earlier. Profit after tax for the quarter stood at ₹762 crores, that is $104 million, which is 15.6% of the revenue. Reported earnings per share for the quarter is ₹45.83. Operating working capital increased by ₹21 crores, which is $3 million. There has been an increase of ₹200 crores each in the receivables and inventory, which are in line with the growth in business. This was partially offset by the increase in the trade payable. However, when we measure working capital in number of days, that has improved by 5 days. We invested ₹250 crores, which is $34 million towards capital investment in this quarter. The free cash generated during this quarter was ₹603 crores, which is $82 million. Our net debt as on September 30, 2020 was ₹136 crores. Our net debt to equity ratio is at 0.01 and continues to reflect our strong balance sheet position. foreign currency cash flow hedges for the next 11 months in the form of derivatives for US dollar are approximately $305 million, largely hedged around the range of rupees 74.4 to rupees 76.7 to the dollar. In addition, we have cash flow hedges of 2.1 billion ruble at the rate of rupees 1.031 to the ruble, maturing over the next 9 months. With this, I now request Siraj to take through the key business highlights.
Thank you, Soumen. Good morning and good evening to everyone. I hope you and your families remain safe and healthy during these difficult times. I am pleased to see our employees and business partners have responded to the current challenging environment and came up with innovative solutions with speed and agility to ensure that we continue to serve patients across our markets. I want to thank them all. We continue to progress well on our transformation journey with consistent improvement in performance across all financial and health parameters. We have yet again delivered strong financial performance this quarter and recorded the highest ever quarterly sales of 4,897 crores rupees. Healthy EBITDA margins of 25.9% annualized and annualized ROC of 23.6%. and consistent generation of free cash flows. The strong balance sheet position and low level of net debt give us reasonable headroom to invest for future growth. Despite COVID-19 impacting fundamental demand, we saw healthy growth across all of our businesses during the quarter. The market demand in India, Russia, and other branded markets have witnessed sequential improvement. However, it is yet to fully recover to pre-COVID levels. The quarter was supported by new products launch momentum across the markets, strong pickup in the sales of brands acquired from Wockhardt in India, and overall cost leverage benefit. We continue to progress well in line with our strategy and believe that we are moving in the right direction with diversified levers of future growth on the back of expansion in market share across key markets and further improvement in productivity. We have also progressed in our effort toward this global fight against COVID-19. As you are aware, we entered into a deal with RDIF, Russia, for Sputnik V vaccines to conduct clinical trials and distribution in India. We are going to initiate combined phase 2 and 3 clinical trials for the vaccines candidate very soon. In addition to that, we are working towards the development and launch of multiple products as treatment options for COVID-19 in our various markets. Now, let me take you through the key business highlights for each of our businesses. Please note that all the reference to the numbers in this section are in respective local currencies. Our North America generics business recorded sales of $247 million for the quarter, with a strong growth of 22% year-over-year and 8% on sequential quarter basis. The growth was supported by new product launches offsetting the lower volume uptake in select molecule segment, impacted by lower doctor visits and elective procedure in the hospital. We launched 9 products during the quarter, including some limited competition products, such as first-to-market products, ciprofloxacin dexamethasone, OTC suspension, OTC diclofenac gel, OTC olopatadine eye drops. With strong new launch momentum witnessed in H1, we are well on track to launch more than 30 products during this fiscal, exceeding our initial expectation of 25 launches. We believe that the H2 is likely to remain busy in terms of launches, and we would also include few niche and limited competition products. Our Europe business recorded sales of 43 million euros with strong year-to-year growth of 22% and sequential quarter growth of 2%. The growth was driven by new product launches since across the markets. During the quarter, we launched 3 products in Germany and 1 product in each in the UK, Italy, Spain, and Austria. In line with our strategy to expand our presence across Europe, leveraging our deep pipelines, we forayed into Austria market in the current quarter beyond our EU five countries. Our emerging market business recorded sales of 864 crore rupees, with a year-on-year growth of 4% and sequential quarter of 8%. Within the emerging market segment, the Russia business grew by 4% on a year-to-year basis and 26% on the quarter-to-quarter basis in constant currency. The market demand has been gradually improving after COVID-19 related decline witnessed in Q1. We also saw similar improvement trends in our CIS markets. Our business in China is also continued to perform well in this quarter. During the quarter, we launched 28 new products across emerging markets. Our India business recorded sales of 912 crore rupees with a year-over-year growth of 21% and a sequential growth of 46%. The strong growth in this quarter was supported by sequential improvements seen in the market demand after a lighter Q1 due to COVID-19 related lockdowns. The sales was also supported with strong contribution made by the business acquired from Wockhardt, which has been performing quite well and ahead of internal expectations. We launched seven new products in the India market, including the two COVID-19 treatment drugs, Avigan or favipiravir tabs and remdesivir injection. Our PCI business recorded sales of $115 million with a year-on-year growth of 14% and sequential quarter growth of 1%. We believe this continued strong demand was in part due to higher API inventory level being carried by our customers to prepare for any potential COVID-19 related disruption. This demand is likely to get normalized in the coming quarters and as inventory catches up with end consumption. However, we expect this business to be a key growth driver supported by our focus on new product development, improvement in cost position, and tailwind due to evolving market dynamics. On the R&D front, we continue to strengthen our pipeline of products across the markets. During this quarter, we filed 27 formulation products across global markets, including two ANDAs in United States. As of September 30th September 2020, we have 94 cumulative filings pending for approval in the U.S. FDA, including 92 ANDAs and two 505(b)(2) NDAs. We also filed 39 Drug Master File globally, including one filing made in the U.S. market. We have significantly strengthened our development pipeline across markets, including development for multiple products related to COVID-19. In the coming months, this will increase our investment in R&D and accelerate our submissions of new product filings. On biologics front, the phase III trials for rituximab is progressing well. In parallel, we are working on the next wave of biosimilar products, which are at different stages of development. On our proprietary business, we continue to actively progress toward building a sustainable, globally relevant pipeline. Simultaneously, we are continuing our effort to monetize select assets through partnership and licensing transactions that maximize their value. We continue to progress on our growth agenda, complemented by inorganic moves. After the successful integration of the business acquired from Wockhardt, we continue on our journey to evaluate more opportunities to help us achieve our strategic priorities. Having sailed through successfully over the last two quarters in the current volatile market environment, we remain committed to do our best and meet the expectation of all of our stakeholders. With this, I would like to open the floor for questions and answers.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening to all. So my first question is if you could help us understand, you know, the volume or the market opportunity for remdesivir and favipiravir.
Yes, remdesivir, we built certain capacity for India, so currently we are marketing it in India and it is going very well. And we are expanding our capacity to ability to help both increasing demand from India as well as from other emerging markets. As for favipiravir, we have set of clinical trials on top of what the originator Fuji of this product. So we have now trials conducted in the Kuwait as well as in the Emirates, and the additional trials will be conducted in the US, Canada, and India to allow us variety of potential data as well as indication, and we will try to seek emergency use authorizations if the data, of course, will support it.
Fair enough, but just if some color could be given in terms of you know, volumes that you are selling currently, or some data, what is the market share you would have in remdesivir, that would be helpful.
We are not disclosing that at the moment.
Okay, fair enough. So, sir, second question on the gross margin understanding. So, you clearly mentioned that, you know, export incentive is partly the reason, so, and price erosion. So, what our understanding is, only the September month it was not there. So, have we accounted export incentive till August? And how do we account going forward, since there's a, you know, there's a statement by the ministry that there would not be any export incentive going forward. So how do we look that, and what is the outlook on the gross margin both for the global generics and the PHI business?
So you are right. In this quarter, it was 1 month impact, that is September. And starting from next quarter onwards, it will be full quarter impact of the export incentive. So that has some impact in the gross margin going forward. And I clarified that you have to look at year on year and quarter on quarter on a like-to-like basis. If you compare year on year, last year definitely gross margin was very high. Beyond the normal range that earlier I alluded to. So there could be, if you look at multiple quarters, you know, over the years, if you see our gross margin, there would have been always fluctuation quarter to quarter. But there is a kind of a range which we will feel is a normal range. One or quarter, because of exception, it goes higher than that. Maybe one or quarter, it could be worse than that. I believe 53.9 is very much within the normal range. Sequential decline, yes, some part is also for the Forex. In the Q1, US dollar was more than 75 rupee, and now it is 73.5, so that has an impact. Just 1 month of these export benefit withdrawal, it has an impact. And of course, beyond that, there are so many multiple factors which impact, which includes product mix, business segment mix, everything. So fluctuations are bound to be there. It's very difficult for us to give any kind of specific outlook. But all that we can say is that we have continuous effort to not only improve productivity, which is in the SG&A line or other overhead, but also improving the cost of revenue. That effort is a continued effort.
Okay, so what I understood was the normal range would largely be maintained despite the export incentive for the full quarter being not there going forward. Would that be correct understanding?
No, I said 53.9 falls within the normal range. I said, so far as export incentive is concerned, in this quarter, this was 1 month impact. And this is not only for us, it is, you know, this is withdrawn by the government earlier than what earlier one thought. That was supposed to be in December end, which has started in September. And going forward, it will become a normal phenomenon. That means there will be export incentive will not be there. So our effort will be to what extent you can utilize by improving, you know, in terms of cost of revenue. How do you improve, you know, process, how do you improve yields, many other things to neutralize that.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to inform participants that in order that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Damayanti Kerai from HSBC. Please go ahead. Damayanti Kerai from HSBC, you may go ahead with the question.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. My first question is regarding SG&A cost trend going ahead. So I understand the second quarter reflects impact of, I'll say, full integration of Wockhardt portfolio. And now with things opening up in Indian market, we assume there will be incremental cost coming up on the marketing and promotional side. So how do you see SG&A cost moving in coming quarters?
So first, we have been able to contain a lot of costs because on the manpower cost front, I think the containment is quite good. And in terms of SG&A as a percentage of sales, you get a leverage if you are getting more and more sales. And this quarter has been very good on sales front. And like as I already told, it is around 20% growth. If that happens, then the SG&A productivity, you know, improves definitely. Yes, you are right. On an absolute basis, the more we start spending on marketing and sales, on an absolute term, SG&A may increase. But our effort would be always, how do we keep on improving the SG&A productivity?
Sure. Thanks for that response. And my second question is regarding the update on recent cyber attack. So, after this incident, do you believe you need to invest more in resources to secure up your system? What kind of investment you are looking up there?
So we have been, you know, building up both in terms of, you know, digital initiative, increasing our digital footprint, as well as all information security measures. So there has been always, you know, attacks which would have been happening, and to a great extent we have been able to ward off most of them. But in this particular case, you know, the cyber attack happened. And so we have, as we have already, you know, given to the stock exchange our notification, we took, as I believe, the right kind of steps in terms of isolating the impacted IT service part, and then taking help of international experts in cybersecurity to really contain and restore from our backup very systematically in a very controlled manner and very cautiously. And by this time, our most of the critical applications have been enabled and are being enabled also. So, but at any point of time, nobody can take, you know, things in a complacent matter. So far as cyber attack is concerned, it's an ongoing effort by whoever wants to do anywhere. But yes, we have been doing in the past, we are doing more heightened surveillance at this point of time, and we'll continue to do. But it's not always a matter of investment. You know, there is always you can reduce the chance, but you cannot eliminate the possibility. So no matter what you invest, it is almost like, you know, zero defect can be a target, but that's an ideal. The more you improve your sigma level, the possibility of defects per million comes down. Same way we can get some comfort of whatever the security that we can build, but you can only minimize, but you cannot possibly eliminate, because there are so many things which are happening on in terms of creating newer and newer strains and other way of attacking.
Sure. Thanks for your response. So I have more questions. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Neha Manpuria from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. You know, just to delve a little bit more on the SG&A spend, I understand your outlook, but if I look at the spend in this quarter versus the last quarter, given we have the Workhard integration and normalization in our branded businesses to some extent, could you explain the reason for such a moderate increase on an absolute level? I understand the operating level, operating leverage, but what helped offset the increase that we saw because of the other two factors?
The broad, as I told, that we have been able to contain various components of the SG&A cost. And specifically, when you do things more digitally and virtually, then the sales and marketing expense will be a little bit lower. But there has been always a sustained effort on improving, containing costs, which has been going on. And we can only disclose as much as we can. So I don't know. The freight which went up sharply in the previous quarter, there has been a little bit reduction, which I have already said in my script.
Understood. And so the digital marketing which helps control costs, that should be sustainable, right? Or do you see this more, as the markets are opening up, probably we go back to physical marketing?
Yes, so we are going to be more productive and we're going to use more digital marketing absolutely going forward. So we are actually even at the beginning of the journey. And I do see ourselves even increasing the level of digital marketing. And some of it will be on the expense of the, let's call it a veteran marketing practices. So more and more, we are going to be more and more digital and more productive on the SG&A.
Understood. My second question is on the ROW market. If I exclude Russia CIS, there seems to be a moderation quarter on quarter. Was there any specific reason for that?
There have been some countries like Vietnam, Jamaica, where the sales has been lower in this quarter.
But a 20% decline quarter on quarter?
Yeah, it has happened.
Some of the smaller markets are dependent on specific products that sometimes tenders of hospital and stuff like that. Some of those markets were affected also by COVID. So I think overall, I think we have a very healthy performance in emerging markets. I'm actually very pleased given the challenges that were in this quarter in some of these markets.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nithya Balasubramaniam from Bernstein Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My question was on the Sputnik V vaccine and the trials you're now conducting in India. If you can help us understand what's the size of the patient pool of your clinical trial and any visibility you can give us on timelines as to when the clinical trial results would be available and when you could launch the product.
So everything is tentative because we need to be also successful with the trials. We are talking about phase two, which is about 100 patients, which will start very soon, and about 1,500 that will be on top of the trials that are conducted in Russia or the global trials for India, which will be conducted right after with the course of the approval authorities. If everything will go well, and of course it's a big if because many things need to go right, it can be as soon as end of March, but of course it can also be after that, depends of course on the relevant results as well as the requirements of the authorities.
Got it. So the 40,000 patient clinical trial that RDIF is conducting, what is the visibility on the trial readout for that phase 3 trial? How is the recruitment progressing?
What we have is the relevant part of the India arm of that. They have it. It's on top of what they do in their global trials.
I understand, but I thought you mentioned that this data will be kind of a bridging study over and above the data that you will have from the large-scale clinical trial. Would you need both for an approval in India?
Yes, we will have to have both.
Hence the question as to, is there any visibility on when there might be some data coming out of the larger phase 3 clinical trial?
I don't have a specific date on that, but what I gave you as a best case scenario apply also to that.
Got it. Just one more related question on the 100 million doses that we saw in the press release that you will be able to supply of this vaccine. Have capacities actually been identified?
Yes, we are working on it, and I hope that it will be ready by the time that we can commercialize the product.
So, assuming everything goes well and you have the right data and you have the approval by March, you will have capacity scaled up to 100 million doses, or would that happen over a period of time?
We will have a capacity that we will build over time. At that point of time, we will not have 100 million available. It will come in a certain space over the time.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kumar Damesha from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. So first question is on the GoCard business. Now that you have integrated it for full 1 quarter, so any synergy potential that you have identified, because there is a lot of portfolio overlap that we have in terms of acute therapy?
I'm very pleased with this integration, as well as from the product, as well as from the people that join us from GoCard. Like I think we discussed in previous meetings, the GoCard deal gives us both synergies on both top line and bottom line, and we are actually now executing on both, so we can sell more in less cost.
Okay, and what would be our current sales force in India?
Excuse me, sorry, can you repeat?
What would be our current sales force in India?
We are not discussing numbers of people. Sorry?
It will be around 6,500 plus.
The overall?
Oh.
Yeah, 6,500 people.
Okay, thank you. And the second question is on the euro. We have seen significant growth in Europe in this year, and that's driven by new product launches and new geographies. But if you can provide some color in terms of how much runway do we have in terms of new product launches. So suppose we have X product right now in the EU5 market. Can we go to 2X or 3X in next 3-4 years, or maybe it is 5X, and will all those products be from our US portfolio or whatever we are developing globally? If you can give some color on that.
On your opinion. Yes, the color is that we just started to expand in Europe. I believe that we will grow much, much more, and we're just in the beginning of launching products. We are not giving guidance for the future, but naturally our base is now very low, and there is a lot of room for us to grow in Europe.
Okay, and any qualitative commentary on margins on Europe business, whether they will be in line with company any margins or?
No, we don't discuss that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tushar from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just extending for this Europe question, now there's another wave of COVID. So do we see any near-term impact on the business?
Another wave of COVID in Europe.
Yeah, I hope not. So far, I do not see any impact on the business.
Got you. So just on this balance sheet side, in the other intangible assets, compared to FY20, it is a sharp increase. So if you could just explain that.
Sharp increase in what, sorry?
Other intangible asset line item on the balance sheet.
This is the Walker deal.
Okay. Okay. Got it. That's it.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sameer Baisawala from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much and good evening to everyone. First of all, Soumen, congrats on your long innings and best wishes for the future. My question first generic Rasipa. If you can just share with us your commercialization plans, when do you expect to launch? Some flavor around what's holding you back would be great. Thanks.
We are gearing up for the launch, and when we are ready, we will launch it.
What's the key bottleneck for the launch? Because you know you've got the approval, you've got the court decision. It's been a few months. Still not in the market?
We are not ready to launch. That's what is keeping us from launching it.
Okay, cool. No worries. So the second question is on your Revlimid settlement. I don't know how much you can share, but the other two settlements, which was NATCO and Alvogen, they had given some sort of a flavor around the entry and the exit market share between 2022 and 26. Is there some color that you can share, even qualitatively, would be great because it's a big product.
No, we cannot share specific numbers because it was part of what we discussed in the past. But let's say that I am very pleased with the settlement.
Okay, and with your permission, one more question, and that's around Sputnik V. Sputnik V vaccine. Will the vaccine require any specialized distribution in terms of refrigeration? And second is, some states have made announcement of giving free vaccines. So will that have any commercial implications for you?
These products will require cold chain, supply chain. This product needs to be kept in a very low temperature. So yes, absolutely, it's a consideration for this product. As for any commercial arrangement, we did not discuss and we're not discussing any of this at this stage. What we are focusing on is to prove that the product is with the right efficacy and safe. Once we can prove that, we will worry about prices and commercial terms. Right now, we are not discussing that.
Okay, great. I've got a few more. I'll get back in at you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vishal Baria from Aviva Insurance. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just to continue on the Sputnik 5, what would be the spend on trials that we plan to conduct for the vaccine in India?
We are not sharing specific numbers, but what I can say that we are R&D is going to increase in the next 6 months, as not just because of Sputnik, but also on other COVID-19 products that we are bringing. At the same time, I think we will be able to contain this cost by improving on the other parts of the business. It's something that will be, I think, can contain it easily.
Okay. And one question on the United States. So if we exclude these nine large products that we launched in, say, the second quarter, how would have the base business behaved? Some perspectives on this could be helpful.
In general, it behaved well. Overall, if you look at prescriptions you can see, for example, like IQVIA, you see that in certain molecule demand went down. Overall, primarily because of the way the market is behaving at the time of COVID, ability of patients and doctors to meet, etc. We do see in some molecules less demand. We see in some molecules more demand. And overall, we, in accordance to at least last report I see, and also what we feel as well, that we increase market share. So it is going well for us.
The price erosion for the base business would be mid to high single digits somewhere there, or better than that?
We are not discussing specific prices for products or for sub-segments of products, but overall the price pressure is more moderate this year than it used to be in the years before, but it will always be there, and this is also the case for this year.
Okay, and just a last question on PSAI, on the API business. What would be the contribution for the COVID-related products in the API business?
Not much. We are producing the API for some of them, but it's not a big contribution. Most of the growth comes from, let's call it, the normal products that we have. And the growth is attributed to the efforts that we did in the last 2 years.
And how has been the pricing for APIs, some perspectives?
How much?
Pricing.
You ask about pricing of the API?
Yes, sir. When we had the pandemic, there was a tight market. So does that continue? Is there a price premium currently as well? Some views over here.
I think that at the beginning of the pandemic, there was more orders of these product tests for companies that prepare themselves for potential scenarios. This got normalized by now, and that's how we see it also going forward.
So do you think the 30% run rate, year-on-year growth run rate, will continue for the second half as well?
I believe that in the second half we will not see the impact of accumulation of inventories. We will see the normal growth that comes. So we will not see maybe the full effect. We see some of this effect.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Surya Patra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity, sir. So is it possible to have a sense what is the kind of a contribution that we would have seen from the COVID portfolio sequentially? Because the sequential domestic growth looks really strong, almost like 46%. Even if we adjust for the OCARD, this thing, this is near about 27-odd% kind of. Obviously, there will be a recovery, but in the domestic market, but if you go by the AIOCD data, that suggests a muted progress only. So is it fair to say a kind of meaningful contribution from the COVID portfolio for the domestic growth this quarter?
So COVID helped, but I would not say that it's the most significant growth. I think all of the businesses perform as well together. So it was a combination of the fact that there is a recovery in the market. As you know, the type of portfolio that we had suffered more during the lockdown. So now the lockdowns was open. It's absolutely helped us, as well as workers, as well as the COVID products. So it's the combination of the three of them.
Okay. If I just take that same question for regards U.S., so then I think obviously the growth number for the quarter is really, they look really strong and great. To some extent of this, the base effect is also there. But here, just if you can give us some understanding that, okay, see, you have a kind of a, or what would be your oncology portfolio revenue share, portfolio revenue share in the U.S.? And since there are studies which says that there is a, because of the COVID, the oncology products witnessed a kind of 30-40% kind of decline over the last 4-5 month period. So what were the kind of impact that you have witnessed, despite which you have delivered this kind of growth?
Indeed, some of the injectables that we have had less demand, not just by the oncologists, can be other hospital-related products that we did see some less of demand due to COVID. Overall, for us, we were able to, between the market share and the new products, we were able to overcome or compensate for some of those declining in certain demand of products as well as for the relevant price decrease. So more volume share, more new products compensate for price as well as less demand in certain products, including some of these injectables.
Okay. Just last one question, sir, on the vaccine side. So if you can provide some idea that, see, so far as the commercial launch of the product is concerned, I think government is indicating about distributing the vaccine or vaccinating or running the vaccination program only through government agencies, and the procurement would be through government agencies only. In that case, do you expect having seen or knowing the fact that there are multiple domestic leading players are there who are manufacturing and almost hoping to launch? So in that scenario, if DRL is thinking about introducing the product in the domestic market, there is any kind of business scope for domestic market?
So you asked about the vaccines, correct?
Yeah.
Vaccine is only for the domestic market. We don't have it for other markets. So, yes, I believe that there is a great need for this, and I do hope that we will prove that the product is safe and with the right efficacy. I'm not sure that, I don't see any competition on that. So I'm not sure what kind of competition you're related to.
Okay. Sure. Thank you. Wish you all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Surjit Pal from Prabhudas Lilladher. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. Could you please tell me, is there the API manufacturing is the main issue for Vespa, as well as some litigation issues where some, you know, liability could come into picture, given that what has happened in other cases in the U.S. verdict?
Sujit, you are referring for which product?
Vespa. I'm not commenting on the activities around this product. What I said before, we are preparing for a launch, and we will launch when we are ready.
Could you throw some light on when could be that possibility? 3 months, 6 months?
Not really. I'm not planning, not because that, because you can understand that it's a sensitive information.
Okay. Another question is about your favipiravir in U.S. So currently, I believe, ongoing trials. So any development on that?
Yes, we are accumulating the data, and we will try to seek emergency use authorization in the United States. And if not, we will try to go to in the normal patterns of registering the product. I hope that we will be able to do so.
And what could be any?
Yeah, sorry. Yes, please.
Any timeline on that? Could you throw some possible timeline?
I don't have yet the timelines. There are ongoing discussions with the authorities about the type of data they want to see in order to allow emergency use authorization, and we are trying to obtain this data. Everything that we are discussing will happen within the next few months anyway, but I don't have a specific date within that.
Right. With the permission, just last question, is that your 100 million budget for Sputnik V trial, is it budgeted for FY21 only?
I never
Or is it across FY21 and 22 together?
We never put numbers for the R&D expenses. 100 million refers to the number of injections that we are getting as a quota from the Russians. That's what the numbers we got licensed to market in India.
Okay, thank you, and all the
We never discussed the R&D budget.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nimish Mehta from Research Delta Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So I'm just trying to understand the gross margin of the global generic business. We have seen a sequential decline of 200 basis points on global generic, whereas we have very large two activity which has actually gotten added. So one is a sharp increase in the domestic business. And second is the launch of Ciprodex in US under 180-day exclusivity. So both these should have meant that the gross margin, at least on the global generic, should have been far higher sequentially. But versus that, we are looking at a 200 basis point decline. So, you know, what is that I'm missing here? If you can explain, that would be great.
So I have already said three distinct reasons. One is lower export incentive because 1 month impact is there. Second is adverse forex rate. Last quarter it was 75 or so. This quarter it is 73.5. So forex rate is adverse impacting. And third is the product mix.
Does the forex really reflect in the gross margin as well, or it is below gross margin that is captured?
So some impact is there in terms of margin.
Yeah, so forex impacts the gross margin in the sense the sale basically comes down. Most of our sale happens in USD. So as it comes down, then the impact flows to gross margin also. And ruble has further been impacted this quarter. So that impact is also there.
Okay, so from a impact perspective, is forex the largest reason why this has happened? I mean, I'm seeing two very strong events. One is the domestic business, which is sharply up, and second is the both should have. I'm just trying to still understand, can the three elements that you mentioned, the factors you mentioned, are they sufficient to compensate for the increase there?
Yeah, so other than this also, there are other products so which has impacted. So these two have contributed positively, but there are factors which have contributed negatively. So there is an overall product mix when we say.
And second, I just wanted to know, there is a product, Remodulin, where I think we already have an approval. And I don't think we have been litigated, so what is that is stopping us from launching the product? I understand it would be an important product for Dr. Reddy, given that it's low competition.
Yes. There are certain activities which are pending. So maybe once we complete those, then we will launch the product.
I see. Any timeline if you can give, that would be great.
As of today, we don't have any specific timeline, but once we have a little bit more clarity, maybe we will ready work on that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. The first one is on the regulatory inspection outlook. You know, have you started seeing the FDA starting to inspect at least some of the global plants, like the plants in the U.S.? From a calendar year 2021 perspective, what do you think are some of the changes that companies need to adopt while having to do these regulatory inspections?
As for the USFDA, we did not have inspections outside of India. As for other agencies, some of them are performing remote audits. That's the preparation people need to do to be able to either obtain data or having audit remotely, meaning use cameras or using other means to present to the auditors and give the information that they need. This is a certain adjustment that we are doing for some agencies.
Do you think next year, do you think this audit, virtual audits, could remain, you know, in terms of proportion or in terms of criticality of plants that we need physical inspections versus, say, others could just keep doing virtual audits? Is there some qualitative sense you're getting?
It is up to the agency. Some agencies already doing, and we even experience some virtual audits and some don't. It's up to them. I believe that COVID-19, unfortunately, is here to stay for the foreseen short term. People will have to take those decisions. Right now, I believe that the inspections, if will happen, will be virtual by and large.
Got it. Thank you. My last question is on China business. I didn't pick up. I think you said 26 products in all emerging markets. Maybe what have you done in terms of the China market this fiscal so far, and the experience of selling clopidogrel, if you can actually walk us through that as part of the GPO. Thank you.
Yes. We are continuing with the strategy and actually executing well against it, including the product you've mentioned. We are not giving numbers specifically for a product. But the strategy, the way we articulated, is working for us, and our China business is growing. And including the products that we get to the GPO, like olanzapine. So in that respect, it is going well for us. So we continue to do both submissions as well as to focus on those products that are now commercial for us.
Got it. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you very much. We'll take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference back to Ms. Amit Agarwal for closing comments.
So just before Amit will finish, I want to this audience to thank someone that is not leaving Dr. Reddy's, but is going to, in next month, going to retire and after 19 plus years in Dr. Reddy's, and will continue to be with Dr. Reddy's after that. And I want to this audience to thank you all for collaboration with Harman, and to thank him in front of you for an excellent service for Dr. Reddy's. And thank you so much for your collaboration all these years with us, and I hope you'll continue to do that.
Thanks everyone for joining us today for the earnings call. In case of any further queries, please reach out to the investor relations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Dr. Reddy's Laboratories Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.